Welcome to SCOTUSCast. The First Sale Doctrine and Imported Goods Manufactured Abroad Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On December 13th, 2010, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Costco versus Omega, a case involving the First Sale Doctrine of copyright law. Under the First Sale Doctrine, a person who purchases a copyrighted work can later sell that work to someone else without the permission of the copyright owner. The question raised in the Costco case was whether the First Sale Doctrine applied to imported works that were manufactured abroad and had not previously been sold in the United States with the copyright owner's permission. In a per curiam decision, an equally divided court affirmed the Ninth Circuit's decision that the First Sale Doctrine does not apply to imported goods that are manufactured abroad and have not already been sold in the United States with the permission of the copyright owner. Justice Kagan took no part in the consideration or decision of the case. To discuss the case, we have Professor David Olson, who is a member of the faculty at Boston College Law School. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Olson.
Hello, I'm David Olson of Boston College Law School. On December 13, 2010, the Supreme Court issued a per curiam opinion affirming, by an equally divided court, the Ninth Circuit's decision in Omega versus Costco Wholesale Corporation. Justice Kagan did not participate in the case because she had served as Solicitor General during the time in which the government was involved as an amicus in the case. This case involves an interesting question of statutory construction of the Copyright Act. The interpretation of the Act, in turn, has major consequences for companies involved in the lucrative practice of parallel importation, sometimes also called gray market sales. Parallel importation is the process of buying products in countries where they are sold more cheaply and importing them into the countries where they are sold for higher prices, so as to undercut and take sales away from the manufacturer who is selling in the high-priced country. It is very lucrative for the parallel importers, and it's infuriating to manufacturers, who often price their goods very differently in different countries, depending on the market conditions and the amount of marketing the manufacturer has done in the countries at issue. In the Ninth Circuit decision affirmed by the Supreme Court, the Ninth Circuit held that under Section 602A1 of the Copyright Act, a copyright owner can bar the importation of foreign-made copyrighted works, even if those works were authorized products sold legitimately overseas. In essence, the Ninth Circuit ruled that when goods bearing copyrighted logos are manufactured overseas, they cannot be imported into the U.S. without the copyright owner's permission. This means that for foreign manufactured copyrighted goods, the first sale limitation of Section 109 of the Copyright Act does not apply. The first sale limitation acts to stop a copyright owner from controlling disposition of a work after the initial sale. This decision leads to a somewhat bizarre situation because due to the 1999 Supreme Court decision of Quality King Distributors versus Lonza Research International, domestically manufactured goods are subject to the first sale limitation even when the domestically manufactured goods are exported and sold overseas. Thus, as of the Omega case, now in the Ninth Circuit, one can import and sell domestically manufactured copyrighted works so long as they have been subject to a first sale somewhere in the world. But if a copyrighted work was manufactured overseas, then it may not be imported without permission, even if the importer bought the good overseas in a legitimate purchase. This bizarre situation, however, may be the result of the best possible interpretation of the relevant, though convoluted and seemingly contradictory sections of the Copyright Act. Because we have no opinion from the Supreme Court, but instead merely a summary affirmance, I'll now review the facts of the case briefly, as well as the arguments made by the parties. It is worthwhile to analyze the proposed interpretations of the Copyright Act because parallel importation is ongoing in a number of circuits, and this issue is likely to rise again in a case in which Justice Kagan does not recuse herself. In this case, Omega sued Costco based on Costco's parallel importation. Specifically, Omega sued Costco for violating Omega's right under Section 106(3) of the Copyright Act to distribute copies of the copyrighted work to the public by sale or other transfer of ownership. The copyrighted work at issue is the small Omega logo on the back of watches manufactured by Omega. Omega manufactured the watches in Switzerland. Costco bought Omega watches at wholesale from a third-party importer and sold them in the U.S. for below Omega's suggested retail price. Omega's interest in suing Costco is to stop Costco from importing Omega watches without Omega's authorization. Copyright law is simply the hook by which Omega is seeking to prohibit unauthorized importation and thereby enable it to practice geographic price discrimination. Omega can charge a lower price abroad and a higher price in the U.S. only if it can stop companies like Costco from buying watches at a low price abroad and reselling them in the U.S. for below the domestic price that Omega desires. This brings us to the sections of the copyright law at issue in this case. Section 106(3) of the Copyright Act gives copyright owners the exclusive right, quote, to distribute copies of the copyrighted work to the public by sale or other transfer of ownership, end quote. But there is a limitation on this right. The statute explicitly says that the rights granted in Section 106 are subject to Sections 107 through 122 of the Act. Of relevance in this case is Section 109 of the Act, which says, quote, notwithstanding the provisions of Section 106(3), the owner of a particular copy, lawfully made under this title, is entitled, without the authority of the copyright owner, to sell or otherwise dispose of the possession of that copy, end quote. This is known as the first sale limitation, because it limits a copyright owner's exclusive right to distribute copies to a single sale. Once the copyright owner sells a particular copy, the copyright owner cannot control resale of that copy. This is why used bookstores can resell used books without violating Section 106(3) of the Copyright Act. A separate section of the Copyright Act, however, grants copyright owners the right to prohibit importation of copies of a copyrighted work that have been acquired outside the United States. Section 602(a)(1) says that such importation without the authorization of the copyright owner is a violation of the exclusive right to distribute granted by Section 106. Recall, however, that the exclusive right to distribute given in Section 106 is specifically limited by the first sale limitation of Section 109. The issue addressed in the Costco case is what is the interaction between the first sale limitation of Section 109 and the right to prohibit importation in Section 602(a)(1). The Supreme Court addressed the interaction between Sections 602 and 109 in 1998 in Quality King Distributors v. Laanza Research International. In that case, Laanza manufactured hair care products in the U.S., invested heavily in marketing its products, and sold them domestically at premium prices in bottles with copyrighted labels. Laanza also sold its hair care products with the same copyrighted art on the bottle labels to consumers in foreign markets for 35 to 40% less than it sold the products in the U.S. A company called Quality King bought Laanza products abroad, re-imported them to the U.S., and sold them at substantial discounts to Laanza's U.S. retail prices. Laanza's lawsuit in the 1990s was very similar to Omega's current lawsuit. Laanza sued Quality King for violation of the Section 602 importation right. Quality King defended under the first sale doctrine. The Supreme Court held that the plain language of the statute meant that the importation right in Section 602 is subject to the limitations in Sections 107 to 122 of the statute, including Section 109. The court then turned to the language of Section 109 to determine whether the first sale limitation applied. The court focused on the language in Section 109 that says that the owner of a particular copy, quote, lawfully made under this title, end quote, is entitled to resell the copy. The court held that the copies of the logos on the shampoo bottles were, quote, lawfully made under this title, end quote, because they were manufactured in the U.S., where the U.S. copyright law applies, and thus the first sale limitation applied. The court limited its decision to the facts, however, and did not address the scenario in which copies are made abroad and imported in the U.S. Costco v. Omega raises the scenario that the court declined to address in the Quality King case. Specifically, the issue in Costco is whether copies made abroad are lawfully made under this title, such that Section 109 first sale limitation applies. The parties argued different interpretations of this language, and the Solicitor General filed a brief offering yet a third interpretation. At oral argument, the justices seemed to find none of the proffered interpretations completely satisfactory. Costco argued that wherever the copies are made, if they are made in a way that would be lawful in the U.S., i.e. with the copyright owner's authorization, then they are lawfully made under this title. The problem with this interpretation is that it would make Section 602(a)(1), the importation limitation, superfluous. Costco thus offers one exception to its interpretation. Costco argues that if a copyright owner grants an exclusive foreign distribution right, then the copies made by the foreign distributor for sale abroad are not lawfully made under this title and may thus be blocked from importation by 602, without the first sale limitation of 109 being applicable. The problem with Costco's argument is that this exception is nowhere in the text, as Costco's counsel admitted to Justice Scalia at argument. Instead, Costco said that it constructed this argument to give effect to the purpose of Section 602, as shown by witness statements in the legislative history about prohibiting imports. The government argued that lawfully made under this title means made in the U.S. full stop. The government argued that copies made overseas are not lawfully made under this title. The government further argued that to hold that foreign-made goods were lawfully made under this title would be improperly applying U.S. copyright law extraterritorially. Thus, 109 never applies to foreign-made goods under the government's argument. The government assured the court that we don't have to worry about copyright owners having perpetual control of resales of copies of their works, however, because under the pre-Section 109 case law of the Bobbs Merrill case, the Supreme Court interpreted the right to vend in the Copyright Act as limited to one sale. The government argued that even though Section 109 doesn't apply to foreign-made copies, the court can fall back on the reasoning of Bobbs Merrill and interpret the right to distribute under Section 106(3) so that it is limited to a single sale. The justices seemed likewise unimpressed with this argument. They asked why the statute doesn't just say made in the U.S. instead of lawfully made under this title if that's what Congress meant. The government gave a fairly weak response that a copy could be manufactured in the U.S. viably under the copyright law, yet still be in violation of some labor law or the like, and that is perhaps why the law says lawfully made under this title instead of made in the U.S. Omega, for its part, argued that lawfully made under this title means that Section 109 applies to copies lawfully made in the U.S. and to copies made anywhere if the copyright owner authorized the manufacturer of the copies to distribute in the U.S. Omega distinguished the term made from the term reproduced under the Copyright Act, arguing that made means authorized physical manufacturing or giving authorization to distribute in the U.S. Under Omega's interpretation, the purpose of Section 602A1 is to facilitate geographic market division and price discrimination. Justice Breyer pushed for an interpretation that lawfully made means made without contravening the Copyright Act, if the Copyright Act were applicable. Thus, as soon as there is a sale anywhere, Section 109 applies, in Justice Breyer's opinion. Under Justice Breyer's interpretation, 602A1 serves the limited purpose of prohibiting importation in the U.S. of foreign-made copies before they have been sold. So a British publisher could not manufacture and sell directly into the U.S., under Justice Breyer's argument, but once the publisher sold the books in Britain, jobbers or other third parties could buy the books and then sell them into the U.S. because the first sale would have occurred. In Justice Breyer's view, Section 602A1 is simply designed to prevent unauthorized first sales into the U.S. Omega's counsel pointed out that if this is the only purpose of 602A1, the section really isn't necessary because the copyright holder could simply sue the authorized foreign manufacturer for breach of contract. Justice Kennedy seemed favorably inclined to the argument made by the American Library Association in its amicus brief that made means cause to exist or cause to appear, and thus the first sale limitation of Section 109 applies the first time that a copy enters the U.S. market such that U.S. copyright law can apply. Under this interpretation, a copyright holder could bar the unauthorized importation of foreign-manufactured copyrighted works. But if the copyright owner authorized importation of the works, U.S. copyright law would attach, and Section 109 would prohibit the copyright holder from controlling distribution in the U.S. after the first sale in the U.S. There was also discussion about why, if the court accepted virtually any of the proffered interpretations, Congress would have drafted the law to give better treatment to foreign manufacturers than to U.S. manufacturers. It's true that if Section 109 doesn't apply to goods manufactured overseas, this gives companies an incentive to manufacture overseas. My best guess is that Congress wanted to enable U.S. copyright holders to divide the market for their goods geographically so that they can price discriminate. This motivation on Congress's part would have been perfectly logical. At the time Congress was drafting these sections of the Copyright Act, it was per se illegal under the antitrust laws for manufacturers to put geographic limitations on where their distributors could sell their products. So allowing manufacturers to prohibit imports helped allow some otherwise prohibited market segmentation. Such a scheme would allow a company like Lonza to sell at a high price in the U.S., where it has engaged in extensive marketing, but also make some extra revenue in Europe, where its products are not well known. I think the disparity between U.S. versus foreign manufacturing was simply the result of sloppy drafting and a desire to facilitate geographic market restrictions. But while one would assume that Congress would prefer not to discourage U.S. manufacturing, it may have been willing to do so in exchange for facilitating geographic price discrimination so that companies like Lonza could get those extra sales overseas, especially if Lonza would then bring back some of the profit to the U.S. It is true that allowing geographic price discrimination may sometimes cause prices to be higher for U.S. consumers to the benefit of foreign corporations, and that may end up being the case in Costco v. Omega. If Omega is not allowed to bar imports after this case, it may lower its prices in the U.S. and raise its prices in Switzerland so as to deter arbitrage. This would benefit U.S. consumers. On the other hand, if most of Omega's profits are made in the U.S. market, it may simply raise its prices in Switzerland. So it's hard to say the effect on U.S. consumers and U.S. firms of any particular case. In my opinion, the best interpretation of the statute is either Omega's interpretation that lawfully made under this title means made in the U.S. or made under conditions authorizing distribution in the U.S., or the American Library Association's argument that made means caused to exist under U.S. copyright law. These arguments are actually fairly close to each other, and under either one, lawfully made under this title would only apply to copies made for authorized distribution in the U.S. If I were to guess as to how the justices split on this case, based on their questions at argument, I'd guess that Justices Breyer, Ginsburg, and Sotomayor favored finding a first sale limitation. The question is, who was the fourth vote? I think it may have been Scalia, given that he seemed to find all of the arguments made by the parties atextual, and didn't seem convinced by the arguments that Justices Kennedy and Alito advanced at oral argument that seemed to favor concluding that Section 109 does not apply. But Scalia may have joined Kennedy and Alito, and Chief Justice Roberts or Justice Thomas may have joined with Justice Breyer. There is, of course, no real way to tell. But what of Justice Kagan? She will likely be the deciding vote the next time this issue arises. How will she come down on this? Justice Kagan served as Solicitor General until May 2010. We know the Solicitor General's office filed a brief opposing certiorari in March 2010, while Kagan was still there. In September 2010, after Kagan ascended the court, the SG's office filed a brief arguing that the first sale limitation should not apply to foreign manufactured copyrighted works. It is thus clear that the SG's office opposed finding a first sale limitation here. But whether that position reflected Kagan's thinking or whether she was simply acting in her role as attorney for the government following a consistent position is unclear. After all, the Solicitor General's office argued against the application of the first sale doctrine to domestically manufactured imports in Lonza, so it has been consistent over the years. So whether Kagan will maintain the position she argued as Solicitor General or whether she will join the liberal members of the court is unclear. Whatever the outcome, it will be important in the economic arena of parallel importation, since many of these so-called gray goods that are imported into the U.S. without authorization of the original manufacturer bear some sort of copyrighted logo. I'm David Olson from Boston College Law School. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.